Welcome back to another great episode of Comedians Can Be Fed, where comedians can be comedians, and I don't really know what that means, but it just sounds like something that you should say on a podcast, man. I just want to warn you guys, I'm simultaneously doing two things at once, because that's what real hustlers do. I'm not really a real hustler. I want to be a father instead, but my mom said that I should be a help, so now we're here. But we have another great guest here for you, and as always, I have a great introduction for him. I've seen him before, but now I'm just going to get to know him a little bit better, man. A very, very, very giving comedian, and what I mean by that is he always gives advice when needed, and that's always really appreciated. Recently voted 2023 comic, and come on, this please, everybody give it up for Mark Faison. AKA Mark Faison.
that's that Italian. Hey, what's good, you bro?
I'm chilling, man. How you doing?
Man, I'm feeling great, bro, man. I'm blessed, man. And shout out to you for runner up for the best podcast. it could have went either way. Like you definitely had something, and I want to salute you for it.
I had no intentions on going, and I didn't know.
Best comedian wouldn't even. I mean, a best clean comedian wouldn't even a category. Like I didn't even know about it. Like I had came just to show some love and support the event, and they was like, "Hey, bro, you better leave." I was like, "No, there's a man, stick around." I'm like, "All right, bro, I'll stay a little bit longer." I should have known they had something up their sleeve.
Just one question about it. I thought they, I'm glad to hear everyone. but I appreciate everybody who enjoys the podcast. But now it looked like it was great. I have a show. Well, by the time this aired, I have a show there at the Sanctuary, so I'm excited about it. Like, once I start
pitching. Yo, it's an amazing venue. I had never even heard of it. I came in, I was like, this is nice.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I just never been inside of it before. Yeah. So I didn't expect it to look like that, but
they did their thing. Shout out to them.
That Neil, they flipped a couple churches. There's another church or two on that same street that one of them is like a coffee shop or something. So
the house of Lord is doing everything
right. The one you've been in the one since in Dayton, right?
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, that's the same thing there. How do you feel about being in venues like that? I used to be a church because I mean, like,
a part of me, but like, just a little bit, but at the end of the day, I mean, if it's the house of Lord, I'm gonna still do me regardless,
yeah. I'll be trying not to cuss in there because it's still across somewhere in there. But.
Right.
I'll be cussing.
They don't take away none of the bones, though. Like, it still look like a church on the inside and the outside. So that's crazy part about it.
Yeah. I'll be cussing because nobody's ever really explained to me why a cuss word is a cuss word. Like, I don't really cuss unless it, like, randomly comes out.
Right.
But, like, I cuss a lot during the podcast. I don't. What makes a cuss word a cuss word?
Very true. I honestly don't. Like who determined these words were bad words? And what's crazy is this: people always think because I'm a clean comic that I'm like this ultra Christian dude who's against cussing. Nah, I used to cuss like everybody else. I just stopped in 2011 because my son asked me to.
My biggest fear when I have a son, I'm probably gonna call him a nigga.
Oh no, I definitely call my son that. Like he do some stuff that, yeah. Like I said, you a miniature you is gonna make you call him the N-word. It's gonna happen. Like my son, I was on my way out the door. He's like, "Hey dad, let me borrow your debit card." And I went to get my debit card. I said, nah, son. I said, "You got your own debit card and you got cash on it." He said, "Man, I ain't even that hungry if I'm gonna use my own money." I said, "Nigga." Bro. He don't want to spend his money, but he'll spend mine.
That's funny. Do you strive to be, and I really wanted to try, wasn't going to really talk about it, but do you strive to be like, okay, we're going to be clean here today, or is that just something that you just kind of like stumbled upon? Or is that was so, like, that you found the most successful?
For me, I said, like, literally, I really did stop cussing in 2011 because my son was, I can't remember how old he was, but he came to me one day and he was like, Dad, you know, why do people use, you know, cuss words so much? And I'm being petty because I'm talking about his mom. And I'm like, yeah, people use cuss words because they don't have the vocabulary to express themselves without it. And this no good nothing gonna come back and say, well, Dad, you're the smartest person I know, so that means you're gonna stop cussing. And I had no rebuttal for that. So I was like, shh. So I had to stop cussing because he put me on the spot. Then what happened was, he's 20 years old now and be cussing up a storm, but I feel weird going back to cussing after all these years. It's been 12, 13 years I haven't cussed.
Do you cuss in your head? Did that count?
I honestly don't know the rules, so I think inside my head I'm cool because it's hard not to cuss inside your head on the freeway, not driving. I call you for names.
That'd be the question I'd be want to like ask my like my pastor and stuff. I'd be like, is it really a sin if I cuss in my head or like explain that?
Ask your pastor. Let me know. Cause I've been doing it.
I am gonna ask him. Yeah, I'm gonna ask him. Like, is it a sin if I cuss in my head? Cause if so, I should have been at that altar today.
Yeah, impure thoughts is there.
Man, yeah, but nah, man. I thought that was dope. I try to. I consider myself to be clean, but the reason what got me to start to be clean was because before I even started doing comedy, I was over at my brother's mom's house, and she was watching the comedian that does the Tran Vanquilla Chris or whatever. He's a white dude. Uh-huh. He's real popular. His name, but he's doing the rings and stuff. And she was just cracking up, and I thought it was funny too. But like, she was so like adamant about how clean he was and how she liked that. That stuck out to me. And even before that, I was like, I think I should be clean, just because at that time I wasn't particularly cussing. And then I just felt like it'd be more of an avenue. And then seeing her reaction to it, I was like, this is just more, I could reach more people like doing it like this way. So, but I'm not hesitant to drop a
yeah, cuss. I just feel like you should have at least 10 minutes of clean.
Yeah, I feel like people who cuss, and that's another reason why they want to cuss, was because I feel like sometimes they use that as a crutch, like the cuss crutch line. Mm-hmm. That's just lazy writing.
Yep. I remember one time I was at the Funny Bone, and a comic came on stage and said, "What's up, mother effers?" And everybody busted out laughing, and I'm looking around like, "What did he say that was funny though?"
Yeah.
And that solidified that I know that what I was doing was working for me. I said, I ain't got nothing against, like my favorite comics are Richard Pryor, Dave Chappelle, Bernie Mac. I like the cussers. I ain't got nothing against it. I just know for me personally, in the path that I'm on, I'm clean for now. Like I said, who knows what the future holds? Maybe one day I will cuss. Who knows? I highly doubt it, though.
That's smooth. That's all right, though. How did you feel to be, like, acknowledged by your peers?
I mean, it's an amazing feeling, but like I said, for me, I was there having a good time and enjoying the festivities in general. So it was just the icing on the cake.
Was there food there? Was there like food?
Nah, I don't think so. If it was, I missed the food.
Was there at least refreshments?
Yeah, they had like, you know, they had a bar there and everything, so you can get some snacks on.
Oh, okay. I'm not saying I can get somewhere. I ain't got no refreshments, bro.
Gotta have something.
So, do you each year, like either the physical year or like your comedy anniversary, do you sit here and be like, okay, this year I want to focus on X, Y, Z? And if so, how do you plan to attack that?
So I do it every year for New Year's, like you know how you do a New Year's resolution. I write out a goal and I make a list of things that I want to work on. And what I do is I set smart goals, things that are attainable but tough. Like I'd be like, okay, I want to write a new 20 minutes, or I want to write a new joke every month. Just I push myself. Like so something that's kind of a recurring one for me is every year I keep the same resolution, which is every show I'm going to do at least one joke that's freestyle off the cuff that I don't write. So I'm going to keep building that muscle.
Why is that?
Because it's such an important skill set, and then it's something that it didn't come to me naturally, so I had to work on it. Like, so it's something I wasn't good at first. So in order to get better at it, I had to kind of force myself to do it.
Yeah.
And now I love it. Like I go to Cleveland and do John Bruton's his crowd work show, or I do Henry Allen and Jason Banks' crowd work show, which, like I said, I love those shows because it forces you to think on your feet and your improv skills.
Yeah, I usually try to open up my set that way. Mm-hmm. Just because it bombs, and that's the first joke that bombs. So.
And then the reason I say that, I do the same thing too, is because I know that my written jokes are fire, then I can rely on them. I can always say, oh, this freestyle didn't go well, but I know these written jokes I got in the back of my pocket, they're gonna kill.
Yeah. One of the things I feel like I've noticed is that after COVID, there was, I guess you could say, a changing of the guards. I started a little mm-hmm. before COVID, so I don't really know who was like top dog or whatever. I do remember seeing only two people I remember seeing us doing something right now. I'm serious. There's like two people or whatever. But it seems like there was like a roster or a team, and then they stopped coming back after COVID. And now there's a new group of people who are regulars at one or both of these clubs. So for someone that's been in it more than 10 years, you know, they've been in it more than 10 years, they have to wait their turn. Are you willing to continue to wait your turn? Or are you more an initiative of making your own opportunities?
I think it's a little bit of both for me. I said, like, what's for me is for me. I said my only competition is me. So I'm not looking at the next man like, oh yeah, I need to go. Whatever I'm doing is what I'm doing. And then as far as, you know, like, and then I'm one of the people who's a fan of the scene. Like, so whoever's in the scene, any new comics, I'm always, you know, reaching back for, you know, giving advice and helping out in any kind of way.
So you gonna stay here
in Ohio?
Yeah.
For now, I bought a house out here, so I'm at least be out here for another year or two. Cause I'm only in year eight.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. Well, I guess I'll ask you this then. How do you find like to get your foot in the door? Because the way I'll say, like, you say you've been in it for 8 years. There's people that's regulars at clubs that it's not even been nowhere near 8 years. So how do you be like, okay, how do I get myself in here from your position?
So, okay, that's a good question. For me, what I did, how I always started was I would go to shows, pay my money. Something you do, you're a big proponent of, is networking. I would always show up for shows. And I would just be there, and they'd be like, "Hey, Mark, you want to do some time?" I'd be like, "Yeah, sure." And I start getting looks like that. Now, however, if somebody else is getting an opportunity that I'm not getting, that opportunity ain't for me. I personally am good because I travel. I said because I do clean, I do corporate gigs, I do birthday parties. I stay working. So if I'm not working at a club, that's all right with me. Long as my check's getting cash and I'm getting better, I'm good.
One thing I've been kind of realizing that sometimes, like, even if you get in a club, you might not particularly. So, like, when you go to, like, clubs, is that something like maybe you should just take whatever opportunity comes your way, or should you be like strategic when it comes to clubs? Be like, that's not a club I want to be aligned with, or do it.
me personally, I don't want to align myself with something that doesn't match my goals and my morals and my ethics. So if this club is out here and they're promoting people who are doing shady stuff, like if it's a club owner and he's somebody that's kind of, you know, cringy towards women and stuff like that, ain't an opportunity work for my soul. So I ain't doing nothing like that. Like, I'm not rocking with nobody who I know is proven to be a creep. So yeah, every opportunity is not a great opportunity. Like I said, I have to weigh the pros and cons with everything.
Yeah, I'll be. My goal is to get in a club, but I'm not in a rush.
Like, because it's gonna come. Like I said, at the end of the day, you being funny and doing what you're doing, the fruit's gonna come. You just gotta be patient and do your thing. And when your opportunity comes, be ready for it.
One thing I saw you did that I really liked was I can't remember where it was at. It might have been in Ohio, but you did like a theater. How was that experience? You had your name on the marquee and everything like that. How was that experience for you?
Honestly, that was top five coolest things I've ever done as a stand-up. Like, it might be number one. It was in Marysville, Ohio, and as I was walking into the venue, I'm talking to one of the comics who go with me. And I was like, man, wouldn't it be cool if they put my name up there? And next thing I know, I start squinting. I said, wait a minute, that is my name. That's my picture. And I was like, oh man, it was amazing. Like, they showed me mad love. They took care of me. They had two green rooms. I'm like, what do I need two green rooms for? But like, it was one of those things where it was an experience or something that just, you know, it solidified me as a really up-and-coming comedian, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You said this was in Marysville?
Yes, sir.
They had their own theater out there?
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, I thought about shooting my special. The only problem is, I don't know if enough people in Marysville to pack it out. That's that's the tough part. Like, you got to build that following where you can go to a city that you're not from and actually get people to come.
I mean, well, Marysville, man.
It's about 45 minutes to an hour. It's not bad, but still. Like, I would have to do, like, a shuttle bus and shuttle everybody there.
Marysville makes me feel uncomfortable.
And those are the jokes that you make. Like when I pulled up, I was like, bruh, man, I was looking for black people when I walked in. I was making sure I was the only one.
That's how I was when I was at Comedy Club.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've been there yet, but it was in, I think, like Miamisburg or, yeah, Miamisburg.
Which one is this?
Ricky's Comedy Club.
Uh-uh, I don't think I've done that.
It's a cool room.
I went there. Okay.
I didn't look like I belonged, and I wanted to leave so fast. Like, when it's like a city that you don't, because, like, if it's a city that I've never heard of or been to, mm-hmm. or like, and it's not a big city, I'm probably going to be in and out, especially if it's like, I don't know this spot. But, you know, people be wanting you to stay around and stuff, so when you be out of town, like, how do you decipher if this is something you can stay in or not? Because I'd be ready to push it.
So, allegedly, whenever I leave Ohio, whenever I leave the city and I'm going somewhere and it's a small town like that, oh, I pack that heat with me, allegedly. Every time.
I didn't take you on the train on her. That's
Oh, no. Like, I literally, where was I? I was just in Indiana. And I was in the car this morning, and I went to go get my in my car. So I thought, oh shoot, I left the gun here. I said, let me go ahead and take this back in the house before I get arrested.
That is funny, man.
Yeah, but like I said, I always tell people, like I said, be smart. Like I said, you know, this comedy thing can take you all over the world, but don't be no fool. Like I said, if I'm gonna go somewhere outside the city where I don't know people, I ain't got a bunch of people with me. Oh yeah, I got a little something on me. Run up on me if you want to.
I don't have nothing on me. That's why I walk fast to the car.
I ain't that bad either. Because like I said, my thing is, like I said, because I never know. And like I said, a lot of time I do shows in these little backwater towns, stuff like that, like Fostoria or Fremont. And they show me a lot of love. However, I never know. And like I said, I don't want to be that one time I'm sitting out here being all buddy-buddy with somebody and they run up on me. Hey, I gotta get home to my family.
Yeah, I get it. I understand. Yeah, that's what I'd be like. Like, if it, like, especially depending on how far it is, I'll be like, yeah, I want to stay, but I got to know. I gotta get back. Yeah. I'll be feeling bad. You gotta network and stuff, but I'll be ready.
I do a lot of those, like, you know, drive there, same day trip. Like I'll drive home and, like, say, like, listen, man, I sleep when I get home.
Yeah.
But see, and that's part of the comedy grind that a lot of cats don't understand. Like it's going to be some nights if you do some jokes in a city where you don't know nobody. Like, I've done shows at a trailer park one time. And this one time, like, it's one of those gig salad shows. And they booked me, and there is no black people there. Not like no color at all. And I'm telling jokes, and it's this dude, he's kind of like heckling me, and he keeps talking with my set. And I did a joke that didn't go over well, and he starts doing this, right? So I'm like, hey, bro, man, you don't wait till you get to your trailer and start doing all that stuff, bro. This ain't this type of party. Come to find out, he had like Parkinson or something like that. His hand was couldn't stop shaking. That was the first time I got a bad review on the gig salad. I felt so bad. I was like, bruh, my bad. I didn't even know.
What's your worst bomb story?
I think the worst one for me is like when I was early in the game. I got a couple. Okay, I got two of them. I need you two. Early in the game, I thought that I was going to write a new 5 minutes every week. So I was like, oh, yeah. All those jokes I did last week, scratch. I'm going to start fresh for the new five this week. And this was when there was a mic called Scarlet and Gray, one of the dopest mics in the city. And I'm on stage and I'm telling my jokes. Like, I think I'm maybe 37 seconds into a joke, and it's going horribly. It's two black dudes in the front row, and a black dude, black people don't know how to whisper. He looked at his homeboy and was like, this nigga is terrible. I was like, yeah, that's my time, y'all. My name's Mark Faison, and y'all have a good night. And I got off the stage and left. Another time, I did a private gig, and it was like this little thing, and the lady was like, oh, yeah, I want you to do your thing. Now, I was supposed to go at a certain time, but it kept getting later and later and later. People had been eating and drinking. It's towards the end of the night. And she was like, all right, yeah, let's go ahead and bring this comedian up. So I'm on stage, and I'm trying to get back. I'm trying to get in my bag, but it's like I said, I'm fighting against the audience who's ready to go and everything. And the lady walked on stage. And takes the mic out of my hand, was like, hey, bro, or she didn't take the mic out of my hand, but she kind of whispered, like, she's like, it ain't working. I was like, all right, y'all have a good night. Now, granted, I got paid, so I wasn't tripping. I was embarrassed, but I wasn't tripping about it. But like I said, it's one of those things you learn from it.
Yeah. Was she an older lady?
Yeah, she was an older lady. But like I said, if it had been younger, I would have grossed her. Like, hey, girl, don't bring your booty up on this stage. I would have hit her with something, but I was trying to be respectful.
So that's one thing I forgot about. I'm going to ask you this. You put me on to, you talked about private gigs. You put me on to this app called Gig Salad, which is a very good app. My fault. It's very good. How did you find it? How did you set it up? Like, how did you use this tool to help you with private gigs? Because that's a little bit more money than just local shows, and I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never. Well, I had some people I talk about private shows, but how did you go about, you know, doing your private shows?
So for me, I got hip to it because of another comedian Dick Dickerson, made a post. And I'm like, bro, what's Geek South? So I hit him up and I asked him a couple questions about it. And he was like, hey, bro, do it. So when a comic that I trust and respect says, hey, bro, do it, say less. So I signed up and I created a profile, and I added a couple pictures and a couple clips of me doing stand-up. So they got a little taste of it. Once I got my first, like, paid gig, that person gave me 5 stars. After I got that first 5-star review, it pushed me up to a premium member where people started seeing my profile more. And I'm still using the free version of it. If you pay for it, you get way more leads. It's an investment, though. It's up to you.
Yeah, I don't think I can make money any more investments.
and that's the thing. Like I said, like honestly, I think with Gig Salad, like I think it's like $20 or something like that for a year or something like that. It's nothing crazy, but like when I did pay for it, like I paid for it for one, like I paid for it like for like 6 months at one point. Not too crazy. I paid the money, but I made it back in tenfold. And that's why I said I wasn't tripping about it. But like I said, typically, if it gotta make sense though. Like I'm not just gonna sign up for every festival and. If there's no chance I'm gonna get in, if there's no chance that I can network and build relationships behind that.
Yeah. I have some people, like when you told me about it, I checked it out. I have some people. Like, I book private gigs, but like you know, people at like church and stuff or heard about me and stuff like that. But like private gigs, unless it's like with a corporation, I've never done that before, but unless it's with a corporation, like, them things can be.
I was telling somebody about this the other day. I said, I did a corporate gig while I was at my full-time job. I left, took a little break, did 15 minutes of stand-up. They paid me $350 plus tipped me, and I was back at work in less than 30 minutes. The corporate gig is where it goes.
Yeah. So how do you because I ran into you one day when he's going to work. So how do you? I mean, I don't think it would be hard for you. Like, you know, I'd be if I'm at work, I don't really tell people I'm a comedian.
I don't mention that too much.
Yeah, I don't want them to know. How do you like keep that a secret from them? Do you go out your way to keep it, or you just
so in my past role, they honestly knew about me. Like when I came in, I was kind of like a quasi celebrity. They was like, "Wait a minute, your birthday's on! Oh my god, let me!" Like they took me around, introduced me to everybody, and what they would do is they would actually book me for events. So I would get paid from my job to do actual events, like the host or tell jokes. So I did a show with Pac-Man Jones one time, the African American Male Wellness Walk. I hosted that for like the last 2 years. And I got that all because I was working for the agency and they knew that I was good as a host and MC. Now, typically, like you said, though, I don't really broadcast it. Cause like I said, I don't need to be like panhandling to my coworkers like, hey, I do comedy, come out and see me. Like I said, it's kind of one of those things where like it's word of mouth, like I'm a promoter on my social media. Cause I ain't friends with most of my coworkers no ways.
Yeah, I don't like to do that.
Nah, it ain't what you want. It ain't what you want, bro.
Nah. Okay, so. Oh, okay. I was going to ask you, how did you go about making your merch? Because it is something that you wear a lot. And how did you come up with like, the idea?
Represent right now.
Did you come up with like the idea and like everything that entailed of like your merch?
Okay, good question. So begging about my faith is something I've been saying to my little sister since I was a kid. Like, cause she would, you know, you had that annoying sibling or something like that always in your face. And my sister would just like she would come in my room and just do stuff to me, and I couldn't cuss her out like I wanted to because my mind was like right there, and I was like, "Girl, you better get out my face." And I would just push her out the way. I don't know what happened. Like, it was like a resurgence. Like, after I started doing comedy one day, I was talking to my son or I was talking to somebody, and I was like, "Bro, you better get out of my face. I'm not doing that." And it just kind of stuck. And I reached out to my best friend, who's a graphic designer, and I just told him, like, "Listen, this is the idea I got." And I said, "Hey, you know, whatever you can come up with, let me know." I told him, I gave him a general idea of what I was thinking. I let his creative genius come, and he created the design that, you know, that it is now. And when I first started doing my merch, I was actually buying it in bulk. Like, I would buy like 20, 30 shirts and everything and try to sell them. But the problem is sometimes you at shows and they don't sell like that. So what I did was I took a Kev on Stage's masterclass, and I learned that you can do drop shipping. So I outsourced some stuff. I had another company who prints it, ships all my stuff out, they take care of all customer service. Now they take a big piece of the pie, but I'm not doing merch for money. I do merch because it's marketing and branding. I want people to be out here supporting, you know, the brand.
Yeah, that's what I did too. I don't buy it in bulk. I just let somebody else.
Yeah.
So I need to get my own merch. That's what I need to do.
Now, I can make my own merch. I've been doing it for a couple of years. I have a heat press. I can make it myself. So if I know I got a show, I'll make a few shirts and take them with me, especially if I'm traveling out of town. If I'm featuring a headliner, I got the merch with me. And I'm gonna sell a couple of shirts. And then what I'm gonna do is, if I run out of shirts, I'm gonna push them to the website. That pushes more traffic to the website. And that's business and traffic that way.
Yeah.
So it doesn't hurt to have both.
Yeah. Yeah, my merch is pretty I don't have nothing related to me.
Mm-hmm.
I created this with me, like with my everyone there. I just copy yet to wear it, but mine's just like embroidery. I like that look.
Ooh, yeah, that's embroidery is really nice. It's expensive, but it's nice.
Yeah. So
I'm glad you said something. I'm a different remote thing. I'm a big fan of supporting comics who have merch. I think I got almost every comic local who sells merch or DVDs. I'm a huge fan of that.
Yeah, I gotta a local comic myself too. I just dropped it. I just dropped it. So I'm trying to still figure it out, still learning how to do the marketing thing. So how did you, how do you market your merch on your social media page to get the word out?
Okay, great question. So I do a couple of things. I have a link tree that has a link to my merchandise and a link to my website. And then on my website, you can go there and you can also get back to the merchandise. So everything I'm doing is pushing you out to my website or to my merchandise. I have the link tree on my Instagram, my TikTok, my Facebook, my Twitter. Everything has that same thing. And then another thing that I also did was, Better Get Out of My Face is a hashtag. So you, even if you don't follow me, you can follow that hashtag. So at every post that I make, I put Better Get Out of My Face in a hashtag. So it's always, everything is redirecting you back to that brand. It's all about the brand. And then every so often, like if like my site would be running a special, if I see they're running a special, I really push hard to promote it that way.
Who do you use to make it ship out shirts and stuff?
I use a Spreadshirt right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I made mine through Printful, and I use Shopify to ship it out.
Yeah, Shopify's pretty good. Yeah. I thought about switching over, but I don't want to do the work.
Shopify is expensive. It's $39.
Spreadshirts ain't cheap either. Like they get a big piece of the pie.
Oh yeah, I did all my merch. the brand champion as a franchise. That's because that's the only one I know of. I mean, the other ones I know, it was the one that started G, like Ladan or
Gildan.
Yeah. But I don't know, that one I gotta see. I gotta feel in person. Sometimes they shirts be a little too like loose on the arms. I don't like that.
Yeah. I feel you. Plus, that you want to get the best product to your customers, so yeah. I ain't mad at that at all.
Yeah. So the champion shirts are not too bad. They ran like 25 hats. It's 18, and then the hoodie is just 60, mm-hmm. or like 65 somewhere up in there. I try to make it at least be reasonable or whatever.
That's a big thing for me too, like making sure everything is affordable, because at the end of the day, I'm not a designer. I don't care about that. I just want people to rock the brand, and support.
Yeah, because I just wanted them to have something nice to wear. Like I just didn't want it to be like.
Yeah, this is trash. Yeah.
It's you can tell it's merch. It don't feel like an actual something. You know, mm-hmm. That's like, I'm a new champion. Plus, I'm a 90s baby, so I was like, let's make make sense. But
the resurgence of champion is hilarious to me. Because if you had champion on when I was a kid, you was getting clowned.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Champion was not it. Champion was the equivalent of buying Walmart gear.
I figured that, but like, yeah. Maybe because I was like a little kid. Like I just, probably like elementary school and like middle school. Then yes, it was lame. But like when I was like six, it was like, oh God, I'm champion. I don't know if it's because I was young, but like.
Yeah. I'm an 80s baby. So if you was rocking champion when I was in middle school and high school, yeah, they was, yeah, you was getting clowned expeditiously.
Oh. Are you born and raised here?
Born and raised, yes, sir.
Random question. How do you, everybody, I'll just ask. I don't really ask, but like. Everybody is, what's the word I can use? Everybody is proud of the Columbus scene. And like, I've only been in it for a couple of years now, but you were here like before COVID, before we had a second COVID, that type of stuff. How do you feel like, the scene is getting better or growing, or anything like that?
I think it's getting better and it's growing. I think the some of the young guns that we got in the scene right now are doing an amazing thing. They're putting on showcases. Like I said, they're not waiting around to get booked. They're creating their own shows and they're putting some of the OGs on. And I love that. Like I said, like it's so many comics that I revere because they come in and they grind and they promote the scene. They push the scene forward. Now, granted, we're going to always have animosity and beef and ego problems, but for the most part, the scene is growing and it's developing into something really dope.
Yeah. How was those, like, mics and stuff? I don't know. It seemed like back before COVID when y'all was just coming out, it seemed like the mics was a little, not saying that they trashed now, but it seemed like they were, I guess, a little bit more legendary back then. How was there now? I know you don't come to mics now, but like how were they now versus the mics that we have now?
I think I like what we have now because like we're doing more workshops now. Like I love the workshops because you know you're trying out a joke and you're getting instant feedback and tags from other comics. Before the shows were like you said, they were legendary. Like it'd be one night you'll see Bobby Dobbs, Jason Banks, Henry Allen, Jake Coates, JR Jr. all go back to back to back. So, and they're all killers. So you're like, bro, it's an amazing night in comedy. But now I think more so the scene is more nurturing in the sense of, like I always tell new comics, I'm like, bro, when they be like, well, Mark, you always showing love. I'm like, I show love because when I first started, it wasn't like that. It wasn't nobody kind of, you know, taking the time and watching sets and giving tags and giving advice. They didn't talk to you until you was funny. Like, you had to do a couple of shows and show and prove that you was actually nice at comedy before they actually respected you back in the day. Now it's like, it's everybody get love, and I think it's dope.
Yeah. That's what's up, man. That's the problem.
But yeah, them old nights, like I said, it would be epic. Now, granted, we would only have maybe one or two shows a night. There wasn't like multiple nights. Like right now in the scene, you got like four or five mics you can go to one night. This is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I hit two mics last night.
Yeah,
and I was tired.
Listen, I ain't even gonna hold you. I was just telling Hassan because you know his mic he used to have was a Red Rock, and I was like Hassan, bro. I said I stopped coming. I said your mic is all on the east side, and then you put comments on around 11 o'clock at night, bro. I'm tired. I ain't ready to be funny at 11 o'clock at night, and I got to drive back home. I'm good, bro.
Yeah, somebody convinced me to come out. They were like, are you going to the other mic? I was like, the other mic. It was like, yeah. It's just down the street. I was like, all right.
If you go to New York, it's mics all day long. Like, there's a mic at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the morning.
I know, which is weird because, like, I would love to live in a city where there's multiple mics. There's another mic tonight. I didn't want to go. Like, I didn't want to go at all. I was like, bro, I'd rather be at the crib, bro. I'd rather be right. At the crib. And I think also because these mics, I mean they're coming up. Some of these mics are a little newer. They're coming up on their 1 year anniversary.
Right.
And then some are leaving, so it'd be kind of hard to be like, all right, this is my routine for this week. Like now my routine has changed because Forrest stopped.
I just saw that. I hate to see that too. That was a good mic.
That was the only mic that I would hit like two a night. Cause mm-hmm. I mean, pretty much Wednesdays and Thursdays. I mean bi-weekly mics, they cool, or once a month mics, they cool, but I don't really count them in rotation. Like, you know, I don't
right.
That's just doing too much. Oh, we got three mics on Thursday, but not the first three Thursdays. I'm not doing all that, like, you know.
Because I ain't got time to remember all this.
Right. So, but I feel like the only mics that we have, like, multiple mics on a consistent basis would be Wednesdays and Thursdays. So I'm probably going to have to switch Thursdays and make that my double night or some crap like that.
And see, and that's another one of my goals is for 2024, is like at least a mic a week. I said that's doable, because like I said I don't get out to mics as much because, you know, I'm a father and I don't be you know going to come out all the time, especially when it's cold outside. But like I said, I do need to do a better job of hitting these mics and networking. Like I said Wednesday at the attic, I'm there in the workshop and I'm giving tags and people are like, oh man, I need to hear this. I'm like, bro, I got you. So I know that. I'm in the comedy game, not just for me, but for other people. So I got work to do still. So I got a lot of people I got to push forward and support.
Man, I'll be staying later for Mike's Mother. Usually I just leave. And I hate it. I hate staying, but I'm like, let's just stay.
I can't leave because, like I said, we used to have a really, like I said, at Shrunken Head, they had a rule. If you came and performed and then bounced right after your performance, oh, they wouldn't put you on. You had to stick around and watch some comics. Like it was like a house rule, like that he had, which I love, because like ain't nothing worse than for somebody to do their stuff and then get on stage and not watch another comic do their thing. So they used to have some rules back in the day that would prevent you from just getting on stage and leaving.
Yeah. I respect rules, but I feel like the rules are unrealistic. Because it's like, I get it. I'll be like, don't get me wrong. I mean, want to hear other people's stuff too, but like, you got to take into account, like you said, a father, you got a wife, and then like,
you got work in the morning, all that stuff.
What if somebody got to work their shift and they can only do like maybe the first 10 and then you run late? So now they taking even more risk. Now they got to wait, like, and then. You know, my case, I gotta get up early morning for work. I gotta still cook. You know what I'm saying? Like, these mics start super late, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I gotta be up at 4, dog. Like, so I gotta try to get some sleep. So that's why I would leave. Now I'll stay a little later. But I ain't staying super late. I'll probably
right.
Start at 10:30. If I ain't see you, I ain't see you.
I'm not mad at you, bro. Cause it'd be like that for real. Like, if we get to talking and talking comedy, the other night, like, I tried to leave the attic like at least 6 times. I started my car from inside the venue, outside the venue. But we got to talking and the conversation started flowing. I was like, bro, man, I'm sitting out here in the cold, freezing my nipples off because we talking comedy, though.
Yeah, that's the only thing. I just wish they would be like, okay, you know, this person got this XYZ. That's just not realistic. Like that, like we got a lot of women that's coming out now, but like I'll be seeing like people like Steph come out and I'm like, bro, she got a whole kid, like a cool kid.
Right.
She's out here. Right. So we supposed to like tell her like, nah, you can't be here because you gotta go back home to your kid. Like, nah, I don't like
that. Right. I agree 100%.
Yeah, I just wish it was like more realistic. Like I agree, like sit down, watch other people, blah blah blah, but Some people can, and some right. people literally make a sacrifice to come out. So mm-hmm. I have my club. I ain't gonna be like, I'll be like, I got it. I understand. Go ahead, do your thing. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah.
So that's your goal, is to own your own club.
Yeah, my goal is to definitely own my own club. It don't gotta be nothing like super big. It just be like like a nice little independent club where people could actually learn how to do comedy and grow, like have comedy classes, have writing workshops, improv
classes. That's amazing.
All that type of stuff. And, I mean, you
know, do it here or in Chicago?
Definitely not here.
see how we do with Columbus, y'all.
It's like it might be here, but I don't. It might be here, but
you never know. You never know.
I guess it would probably either be here or like whatever city like have the most fans at. I guess I don't know.
Right.
Rocking me the most, but yeah, I definitely want to do that just to help nurture and stuff like that. And like, definitely bring some big names in there, but bring like legit hilarious people that you probably never heard of to like get to know them and stuff like that.
Right.
I'm all for the underdog, so it's just a comedy club for like the underdog.
That's amazing. I like that, bro.
Yeah.
So I pray that dream becomes a reality.
Yeah, man. I want that. I think having a club is probably not the smartest thing because you don't really make money, but you know,
right.
I think it'd be dope and sweet just to have one. Especially more so because we don't have a lot of black club owners.
Right, right.
I definitely think that needs to change because I definitely want to book white comics so they can see how we feel when we go out. Almost every time I have a show, I make sure I book somebody white because
so they can kind of get a taste of it.
Yeah, I want them to feel how we feel on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Too, I know it.
I tell people all the time. I said the best comics can do either one. It's maybe five or six comics that are of Caucasian that are coming at least do a black one. Not a whole lot, because I get it. It's tough. It's unfamiliar and it's scary. But the only way you're gonna know if you can rock it is by rocking it.
Yeah, but that's what makes you better.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
At least I'm not gonna say white rooms though, because they do, but black rooms definitely make you better. But yes, when I move to Chicago, I definitely want to move to Chicago because it is very segregated there. So I'm like, well, shoot, I can go to this side of town, work on some jokes, see if Mexicans like it. I'm like, there's no better place to be. It's diverse, and I want to make sure everyone understands me. The worst thing I hate about comedy is, like, I'm not going to say no black comics do it. I've only noticed this with white comics. You ever notice, like, when a comic will go up there and they are killing, like, you are not laughing. You just don't get it. But you know they killing. People are just...
Mm-hmm.
So to
piggyback off of that, sometimes comedy is subjective, so I can't relate to the point that I laugh externally, but I enjoy it. Like I might watch it and I may not laugh ha ha ha, but on the inside I'm like, okay, that's good, that's a good joke right there, I like that. So that's, for me, that's good enough.
That's level one for me. But yeah. Level two is like, when are you getting on?
That's the thing, though, because comedy is subjective. That's why I be telling people, like, when people put out those lists, I was like, I don't know why y'all get mad. It's all subjective.
Yeah.
You can put 10 people in a room and show them 10 different comics, and not all of them have a different favorite comic. It's all of it subjective. You don't know. Everybody, you know, everybody got their own cup of tea. Everybody got their own flavor of ice cream they like. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I'll never say nobody. Well, I did tell a comedian to his face that I didn't think he was funny, but for the most part, I won't tell somebody that they're not funny. I know.
Bro, you said you told him to his face he wasn't funny?
Yeah, he was at my house.
Oh. You's a wild boy for that. we got to have to fight or something, bro. I'm breaking some furniture. I'm stealing some records. You ain't going to just tell me I ain't funny to my face.
It was with love, but then like... Yeah. But then, like, 2 weeks later, he made me laugh, and I was like, good set. So, I guess he was wrong. But, what was I saying?
You talking about owning the comedy club, talking about working white room versus black room.
Yeah, I forgot.
You went off a whole page.
Yeah, I forgot. if they're lost, it went somewhere in the universe. Oh, like I was talking about, like telling comics like not. Oh, I've never say like a comic's not. Well, except that one. But like, if I'm sitting there and I'm just like, I don't get it, but they laugh, I know they're funny. They're just not funny. I'm more so upset that I don't get it. That's what I'm upset. Like, why? What is it? Because and white humor is just different than black humor. Like, there's like, I don't know.
It's cultural. That's what it is. It breaks down to culture. Culturally, there's some stuff that you and I have a shared experience, even though we didn't grow up together. So culturally, there's some stuff you're just going to get. Like, if I tell you, have you ever made a cup of Kool-Aid? Not a whole pitcher, just a cup of Kool-Aid. You probably like, oh, I may not have ever done that, but you've seen it done before. Like, that's a shared experience because of growing up in the hood. That's something we can share. So culturally, there's some stuff that you're just going to get.
I'm trying to back up from doing cultural things because it's like a blurred line between like mm-hmm. being like, oh, you stole my joke, and it's like, you know. Mm-hmm. And then like with the whole thing with like Kat and Cedric, like, okay, like, yeah, it kind of looked like it was stolen, but like we all see like a black person like kind of drive like that, you know what I'm saying? So it's like it's like blurred line. I would never unless it was okay, like my hairline joke, if someone said that joke like bar for bar, I'd be like, okay, clearly that was mine. But if it's like something like
a common concept or something like that, like I typically like cultural things or pop culture reference things like that, those are things that I do as freestyle. Those are throwaway jokes. Those are not actual set. Those are things that I just do like a freestyle, and then I let it go. I post it on Facebook or Instagram, and then I leave it alone. It's not an actual set material. My set material is my personal experience, my life. Like, I think Tony Rock told me this. He was like, bro, he said, if you talk about your life, can't nobody talk about, like I said, that's your experience. So we might have a shared experience, but that's going to be, it's going to connect with you the best. And that's worked out for me so far. I haven't had anybody say I stole a joke, or I haven't caught anybody stealing my jokes, not yet at least.
Yeah, but I had somebody say I stole a joke because I said that my mom didn't have McDonald's money. I'm like, nigga, everybody mom said that.
It's a common thing.
Yeah, if I'm like, if I say that on stage, I'm saying it because I know they're going to relate to it. They're going to laugh because they're
my right.
Family too. So just because you heard some black comics say it another way doesn't mean that. But comics are so in their ego, it's like, I'm just going to stay away. Because I don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't. Yeah, I try to like make sure at least in definitely for me, but in this scene, just be the most comic, the comic that just says like the most, not necessarily random shit, but like, how did you come up with that? You know, like,
right, very unique. Like,
how did you come up with it? Right, so, how did you come up with that thought?
Right. That's a dope way of thinking. So for me, I had a joke that was quite similar to Deion Cole, and I had been doing it for years. Now I know for a fact Deion Cole ain't stole my joke, but but once again, we have similar thoughts. He did it completely different way. So what I did was, because I'm not nowhere near as big as Deion, I stopped doing the joke completely until I got to a point where I was able to do it in a way that was different and separated. Because I said, if I don't know that I'm doing a joke that's similar to somebody else, that's one thing. But to knowingly know that somebody else is doing that joke like that, nah, bro, I'm switching it up. I'm not doing that joke until I find a way to do it in a different way that's unique to me.
Yeah, I'm not even touching it no more.
And I've done it too. Like I have a really good joke. I threw away because it was too close to somebody else's joke. I was like, that's gone. Or what I'll do is this. I'll give them the tag. I'm like, hey, bro, I have a joke similar to that. If you want, I like your joke better. You can have this if you want it. Some people take it, some people don't.
Yeah, I'm staying far away from that. Because I just, like, with the cat and with the cat situation, and just seeing that happens at every level, which I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure this does. So, it don't faze me, but it was just like, I get it. It's just like, it's... at the end of the day, like, I don't know, like, what's more important? This joke or, I just don't like to see us, like, we're the ones that bicker the most. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, at least publicly we do.
Yeah, right. I agree.
I don't like that. So I'll just be like, yeah, I'm going to stay away from that. Let me just.
And that's a good approach, like I said, to come to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to leave it alone. I'm going to move on. Because there is, like I said, there is no winning. Like I said, if we're arguing publicly about a joke, I feel like as a dog, like if I see somebody doing a joke that's quite close to mine, I'm like, hey, bro, listen, you know, I got a joke that's similar to that, and I've been doing it for a little while. I'm taking the ego out of it, though. I'm like, hey, bro, this is what it is. And, you know, once we have the information, it's up to you to decide what you're going to do.
Yeah. As we start to wrap this up here, and thank you for being multitasking. While I do this podcast, who is on your Mount Rushmore for comedy?
Oof. Such a tough one. Richard Pryor, Dave Chappelle, Red Fox, and Sinbad.
Good, because I was randomly going to say I was going to watch Stanford and Son and Smoke tonight. Nah,
Red Fox, bro, is a beast. Cats is still stealing Red Fox jokes to this day.
What is any of his, I think one of them might be on YouTube. Is any of his specials on YouTube or something?
He did a lot of albums, so like they're like you can get vinyls of them or something like that. I don't know if they're on YouTube. I've never even looked. Like I have like CDs of it that I have or something like that. But I don't have any actual vinyl. I mean, any actual like recorded specials online that I've seen.
I'll have to see if my Red
I'm gonna look into that though. But Red Fox though, like those one liners, they're so quick and so witty. He was crazy.
Okay, I'm gonna have to see if study for his one liner. I'm gonna see if they got it at the record store. Okay. What piece of advice could you give to any young comedian that's listening to this right now?
Keep hitting those mics, keep writing, keep networking, and in that first year or two, focus on your stage presence and finding your voice. Like I just told a comic the other day, I said, hey bro, you need to talk like you're talking to your best friend. Like, stop trying to be all extra funny and stuff like that. Work on that stage program. Work on finding your voice. Once you do that, the rest will come. Say that one more time.
Message. I messed that up. I will never record another episode while working. But I needed to also. Because I just paid for this ticket. I'm like, yeah, I need this money back.
I can dig it.
I got it for the low, though. I was like, I got to get it today. You ever looked at plane tickets and then you go back the next week and they're like a whole totally different price?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm just going, whenever I look at it, I got to get it that day.
Right. Yep.
Back, I'm going to be pissed.
I'm going to Atlanta next weekend. I was like, oh, man. I said, those tickets were the price. They were the price. It was round trip. I got to get them now.
Man, I looked at Delta first. I was like, nah. Bro, I haven't been on Delta since the first time I rode a plane, bro. Like, Delta is expensive. Bro.
They pricey. Give me an American. I don't mess with Delta or American. I fly Southwest mostly.
Southwest is my favorite. I haven't flew them, but I did buy Southwest tickets today. Mm-hmm. I've been on United. I don't have anything bad to say, but it was a connecting flight, so I'm not really, I don't have anything. It's zero. Right. American Airlines, last time I went on a plane, I flew American. It wasn't bad, and all the seats wasn't filled, which was and I haven't been on Delta since. I was 11, so I don't know what changes they've made, but
right.
They're doing some good things if they charge an $800 a ticket.
Jeez.
Like, nah, bro. We went straight to Southwest and got it for four something. All right, so tell people why they should listen to Comedians in Bed.
I think you should listen to it because you get a different perspective from comedians all over the world. You get comics who have been in the game for 10, 15 years. You get comics who have been doing it for a year. You get a perspective that's different and honest and real comics, you know, giving you real. And I think it's dope. Plus, I think Ty's a good dude. And he owed me some money. So once he gets his ratings up, he can pay me my money back.
Mark, tell people where they can find you at.
You can find me on all social media. That's MARC_FAZON. I'm accessible. And in most cases, I follow back too if you catch me on the right day.
Hey, man, if you want to catch next week's episode, we go live every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I won't say that yet. Oh, do you have, do you know if you have any like shows in like March or something?
March, I actually have a show I'm doing with the Soul Dope show with my homegirl Camille. It's going to be March 8th. It's Friday, March 8th. It's going to be at the Upfront Performance Space, which is 503 South Front Street. Doors open at 6:30. Show starts at 7:30.
Okay, so make sure you guys see that. Check him out with IG to get more information on that. But if you want to see more weekly clips of our episodes, please follow us on IG at Comedians in Bed Podcast. Once again, we want to thank my man, Mark Faison, for coming back on the show. And we will see you guys. And thank you for your patience for working with me. I'm turning over here. I will never do this again.
Yeah, it's all good.
We'll see you guys next week.
All right, buddy.